This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age. Online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 150. Today we speak about contemporary issues in ecclesiology. Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. We are back for episode number 150, a milestone for us indeed. We've been recording and producing and distributing these consecutively, one per week, and there was one week where I accidentally put two of them out. So we've been doing 149 consecutive weeks here, and we're very excited, and I'm very pleased to welcome back our regulars. We have Jeff Waddington, who is teacher of the congregation at Calvary OPC in Ringgoes, New Jersey. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. How you doing, Camden?
Yeah, it's great. It's been a while since I've seen you last. Couple minutes. Since the last episode we recorded.
That's right.
And the wonders of recording and offline. And we're very pleased to also welcome back to the program Nick Batzig, who's a church planter in Richmond Hill, Georgia, with the PCA. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Camden. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing about as good as I was doing last time we recorded.
And
we just
got 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, which is fantastic. We had a wonderful discussion last week with Kim Riddlebarger on the subject of amillennialism. And we got into talking about all sorts of issues of hermeneutics and different takes that different churches and different traditions have and have even had throughout the history of the church. And so today we want to be speaking about contemporary issues in ecclesiology. And typically we're going to find that these issues can crop up in the different traditions that espouse different eschatologies. So I think this is going to flow at least in a loose level out of our discussion last week. And if you did not listen to that, visit us online at reformedforum.org/CTC149 if you'd like to listen to that discussion with Kim Riddlebarger. It was an excellent one. We did mention also last week a new book, A Festschrift to Dr. Bob Godfrey. Jeff, would you like to mention a little bit about
that? Yes, it's called Always Reformed. It came out just a couple of weeks ago, as Dr. Riddlebarger pointed out. I think it was about a month ago, because it was
well, at least
I
when
had
we received
my electronic
the copy.
I had my electronic copy on the 10th of October.
But they, you might have received it before the publication. But who's published
that's
this?
It's an excellent scholarly celebration of the life and ministry of Dr. Bob Godfrey, who is professor of church history and president of Westminster Seminary out in California.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good chapters in there. It opens with a chapter by Sinclair Ferguson and includes chapters by Michael Horton and Kim Riddlebarger. Scott Clark and Joel Kim are the co-editors of the Festschrift.
And you were saying there was some involvement by Chris Caldwell.
I believe, yes. He was involved in the editing and typesetting. It's published in-house by Westminster Seminary, but it looks beautiful. It's a very attractive design.
He's the editor, general editor, and
of the Confessional Presbyterian
which
Journal.
Is a great work there, so visit that. That should have a new issue.
The issue within the next month or so.
Yeah, and you have a piece in there, don't you?
I have two. I have an article and a book review.
Wonderful. So visit cpjournal.org, I believe. Might be com. We'll
something
put a link
like
in the show notes. And you find the December, well, the issue for 2010.
It will be the issue with B.B. Warfield on the cover.
Yeah.
The new issue coming out for 2010.
I think James Dalzell has a piece in there.
He does.
And Jim Cassidy. So Reform Forum is well represented.
It is, very much so.
The Confessional Presbyterian. And Nick, did you have anything to mention? Any books or any news, conferences, or anything going on in Georgia with the PCA?
No, I am just pretty consumed with church planning and finding it hard to find time to blog and do these shows, so I'm thankful I can be on.
But yeah, well, we're thankful to have you, and we do recognize how difficult it is, the world of church planning. We've been speaking with Andrew Moody as well, who's got a work coming up in Houston, Houston Reformed Church, and there are many church planners around not only the U.S., but the world with the efforts of the PCA and the OPC and other great Reformed denominations. So if you have any information about church plants, or if you're out there listening and you would like to find a church plant in your area, of course, contact the various denominations, or you can send us an email as well, and hopefully we can put people into contact with each other. And I know there are pockets of Reformed people out there that don't have access to a Reformed church near them. So I guarantee you are not alone. Right. So contact somebody. Yeah, we would want to encourage them. So particularly if you're in the Savannah area, you can get a hold of Nick or email us at mail@reformforum.org. And also we're very aware of some great work going on in Houston, Texas. So let us know.
The interesting thing about Andrew Moody's church plant is that it's built upon the use of social networking.
Yeah. And that is pertinent.
It's a new way of doing things, of course.
It's pertinent for today's discussion as we venture into the world of contemporary issues in ecclesiology. That's a great point, great place to start, Jeff. But before we do that, I would like to mention that we are broadcasting live to you-know-who, Machen's Warrior Children around the world at reformforum.tv/live. If you visit us there, you'll be able to follow along and chat in our chat room as we record these episodes, and you can visit our calendar on that website for information about all of our upcoming programs, and you can participate if you so desire. So visit us online at reformforum.tv. And as well, I need to put in the appeal before we get started. My treasurer and my other board members are going to be upset with me if I don't. But, of course, it does cost to produce these episodes. And we thank you already for all the prayerful support we receive. And it's great. And we feel that. But also, we would ask that if you're able, that you'd visit us online at reformforum.org and click the Donate Now button. And to help us to continue to produce and distribute these programs free of charge. We do this because we enjoy it, but it's a labor of love, and we also enjoy providing a window into a Reformed conversation, especially for those people out there who aren't able to have Reformed conversations in their area. And if you have a heart for that as well, and if you enjoy what we've been doing at Reform Forum, please visit us online and consider supporting the work here. We thank you in advance for your support of Reform Forum and our program today, Christ the Center. Well, we've got so many websites, we've got so many things going on, and you mentioned Andrew Moody trying to proactively use social networking to plant and develop and grow a church. Many of these technologies were unheard of a decade ago, and now that they've come to the fore and are being used and are actively shaping, some would say controlling, our culture, we are encountering all sorts of ecclesiastical and ecclesiological questions and issues that would never have even been thought of before. What are we going to do, Jeff and Nick, with these advances in technology and their impact upon the modern church?
Well, like anything that's humanly contrived, they can be harnessed for the gospel, but also sinfully infected. Mm. And so we're called upon as Christians and as ministers of the gospel or future ministers of the gospel to wisely or prudently use these technologies. Two extremes, we don't want to treat them as if we're in heaven now that we have them, but on the other hand, we don't want to be afraid of them. But we do need to reckon with them. It's the world in which we live. Social networking technology is a part of our life. Mm. We could go around wishing we were still riding horses or horse and buggies and not,
and indeed, there are some to the west of us
who do. And yet, even there, you will find the occasional house that has a public telephone on a pole at the end of the lot of a yard.
Yeah,
that is used by the neighborhood.
Yes,
one family, I guess, that is designated. That's where the phone will be located.
Yeah,
we're talking about folks out in Lancaster County in that area.
Yeah, so there technology is always going to impact our lives, and it's a matter of how we engage it and how we use it. But that's just one example of a number of ecclesiological issues, but the one we want to start discussing today.
Well, it's interesting. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I think this is a complex issue, and we've all had a lot of conversations about it, us three and other guys involved and guys we've interviewed and you know, there's so much out there on the internet, and I understand why a lot of the old school reform guys are either afraid or critical. But at the same time, I mean, this is a difficult discussion because I think all of us would agree not everybody should write a book. You know, God hasn't gifted everybody in the same way. And so there's a sense where, you know, Paul in Romans 12 says, to each one of us, grace was given, and not to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, but to think soberly as God has given each one a measure of faith. And I think there's a sense where, you know, some people shouldn't be blogging, shouldn't be using social media because they don't communicate well in writing. It's not the best use of their time. They're better with relationships. Other people, God's given them a lot of good things to say. They have gifts in writing. Assessing that, they can say, you know what? Others have told them they've benefited from that, and so they need to work very diligently to use that. And it's a matter of your heart too, right? I mean, it's absolutely, you know, are you seeking self-aggrandizement? And that's always a problem. I feel that in my own heart. That's a temptation, you know, sinful pride. But if your desire is to glorify Jesus and to use social media to reach people, to grow your church, to build up the people in your church, and to get good theology out there, well, then we should work as hard as we possibly can to promote those things for good, and as anything else we'd set our hand to do it diligently. And I just think this discussion is huge, and it's not as easy as should we or shouldn't we, and I know you guys know that, but it's how do we use it to the best of our ability, and should we personally as pastors, I mean, there are pastors that shouldn't be blogging and shouldn't be
well, right,
doing stuff on Facebook because they're not.
Nick, there's two different things going on here, okay? We're talking about, one, the use of the technology as a Christian, a layperson, or as a minister, but you're talking about the more specific issue of using the technology intentionally to teach and to do outreach as part of the ministry of the church.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're interrelated. They're not separated. But I was simply saying that the social networking is it's a part of our culture.
Yeah, it is. I don't think you have to use it. I mean, I know a number of godly older men who are not, who don't come out against what we're doing and make snide remarks. I know a lot of men that have done that, sadly, but I know other men who just say, you know what, I'm afraid to use Facebook. I don't know how to get into that world, and they don't want to. And I kind of think, okay, then you don't need to be.
Well,
you know,
true,
I don't
except
fault
that
for that.
There were also people at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century who didn't want to get into a car.
Sure, sure.
The reality is very few people ride on horseback for normal transportation. And the use of the phone has been going on for over 100 years now. So there are technologies that become a part of the world. Try to find a payphone, for instance. Cell phones have become so ubiquitous everywhere.
Sure.
They're just a common part of, you know, the culture in which we live.
But
you are correct. I've often said at the place where I work, you know, people come in and want to get something printed, or, you know, and their design is really bad. They have all the wonderful technology to produce a fine looking poster or document. And conversely, I've had people come in whose documents look like they're professionally done. Just last week, I had a person who brought in a poster to be done, and it was beautiful. I said, oh, did you have somebody professionally do this? And they said, no, I did it. I said, well, you obviously have a good eye for what is appealing, what looks attractive.
Yeah.
And the same thing, okay, we could have all the technology and yet be poor writers or poor communicators.
Absolutely.
That's right. And that's, I think, with using social media and using, you know, Twitter and Facebook and blogs and everything else to communicate theology, especially just keeping it narrowed to that, or, you know, things that specifically have to do with the church. I think one of the dangers that we're going to see young guys up and coming, coming up through the church, wanting to go to seminary, even guys in seminary who are doing the majority of their reading on blogs and getting the majority of their, you know, their
that's a problem.
It is a problem. And even, you know, Justin Taylor, who puts a lot of great stuff on his blog, puts, you know, books. The other day he had a post where he interviewed pastors on the, I think, like five most influential books. And it was very helpful to have to hear, you know, men, ministers who have had years of experience say these are the five most influential books. Those things can be helpful. The problem I see, though, is these men never spend a great deal of time in books themselves.
Well, I've seen this even with my own daughters when they've done schooling at the elementary, junior high, and high school level. And they would put together papers, and their bibliography were purely Wikipedia articles. And I said, go back to the drawing board, young ladies. Wikipedia may be a perfectly fine place to start, right?
Right.
To get your general ideas, just like we would use to,
when
we were younger, we would go to the World Book Encyclopedia or the Encyclopedia Britannica to get the general lay of the land, right?
That's right.
Subject matter.
Sure.
But it doesn't
promote where you
scholars.
End. That's
right.
That's like the first place you start. But but you're right. I mean, if you limit your intellectual and spiritual diet to what's on the web, can be a problem.
Yeah, let me raise one more thing and see what you guys think. One danger I guess I'm starting to notice is it's not acceptable to be overly critical in public. Now, you guys know me, I'm a very critical person. I want to be a critical thinker. You know, there's ungodly criticism. There's, I think, biblical criticism where God calls us to be, you know, wise and to think through things carefully and biblically. But one of the dangers I see is because the internet is not a place where there's really a whole lot of healthy, careful, objective differing, but there's more of this vitriolic, hey, you said this, you know.
Flaming.
This really quick, flaming, commenting. Or then the blogs on the other side that are just taking on every issue, a lot of which I'm thankful for things that get written on those blogs. But it doesn't teach people to think critically. And then it just popularizes a guy who is already really popular. And then all these guys coming up who haven't read deeply and haven't been taught to think analytically and critically just go on board with whatever is trendy. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a problem that happens apart from social media, but it does seem like social media promotes that. What do you guys think?
Well, that's what I think Carl Truman refers to as the democratization of the internet, right? In other words, you have the ability to publish, so therefore you're an expert.
Right, right.
It's a consequence of what the technology is. There's so much good in the fact that you have this explosion of information and this free exchange of ideas because there's such a low barrier of entry. But the downside to that is you don't have naturally the editorial processes, you don't have the hurdle that you need to pass to get something published, the vetting.
Right.
Peer review,
all that kind of thing.
Yeah, but we are entering an era in which people don't think about that. Everything is, there is a democratization and everything comes to you at a level playing field because it comes to you through the same screen. In many ways, what I find is unfortunate, you often place an importance upon a website's information based on the quality of its design.
Yes.
Meaning if a website looks good, then some people tend to ascribe a higher level of authority to it than if it's a poorly designed website. It's really odd.
Now, I will say that you can't judge a book by its cover, which is really what you're saying applies to the website.
Well, However, we shouldn't, but people do.
Yeah. I would say, on the other hand, with my graphic training background, that I'm not impressed with ugly sites either. I don't think I make the mistake of assuming, oh, this is nicely designed with this is authoritative information, right?
What do we do here then with this democratization? Clearly it's not as bad or as dire as we were painting the picture, but you do end up with you have your own social network, or what people call your social graph. You have your reference point, and you're probably going to be reading many sources that many of the other people in your graph are reading as well. And so some of the cachet or the influence of a website or a source will be derived from the value that is placed upon it by your connections, yes, by your friends, by your family, by your peers. Right. So how do we go about this in terms of ministry? I want to move us into that direction ecclesiologically. When you have, let's say, Nick, that you're teaching a Sunday school class. This is entirely hypothetical. For the listener, I'm making this up. But let's say Nick is teaching a Sunday school class. What do you do, Nick, if you have somebody in your Sunday school class who starts to disagree with you? You are their pastor, but they're disagreeing with you because so-and-so on a blog said something different.
Yeah, I just usually argue them into believing my position. And then,
jingle the keys of the kingdom.
right. I force myself on them until they hate me and can't argue with me anymore. I think, Camden, we need pastoral wisdom. Yeah. I lack a lot of wisdom, and I think you got to weigh the issues. I mean, right. If somebody's, I think, you know, I've also misread people who raise an issue, and I think they're challenging me, and they're not really challenging me. They're just trying
asking
to get better
information.
Yeah,
we've
got to
learn
point,
how to read
brother.
People. We've got to learn, you know, what wells are they drinking from? Are they on the internet reading Federal Vision asking about, you know, paedo communion because of that, or are they just legitimately wrestling with, well, you know, the kids, I'm reading the Bible and the kids are, you know, the blood went on the doorposts of the Egyptians and, you know, the whole family was covered by the blood, and what do I do with that? And so, you know, trying to understand where people are coming from is something I need to grow in personally. And do you know what I'm saying? Understanding.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a case by case thing, because, you know, it's probably better to pull people aside, give them reading material. One thing I wanted to say, I had a really interesting discussion with a good friend of mine, Jeff Stevens. Jeff is the graphic designer for Ligonier. He's the overall the graphic design for Ligonier, and just a very bright guy and thoughtful. He goes to Independent Presbyterian, and Jeff said to me, he said, you know, I want to have something of the grasp of literature the way I see in you and in other guys, where you can hear something and you can say, but wait a minute, so-and-so says this over here, and then bring them together and compare them. See, I would love for my people and somehow get your people there, you know, so that when they read things on blogs and they're learning things and picking up things, you're teaching them to think for themselves. And that's, I think that just takes a lot of work, you know, because I'll give people books in my congregation, and I had a guy tell me yesterday, this is really funny. He said to me last night, yeah, I've had to put down a couple books that I've heard you recommend, and one of them was a more obscure book, and then the other one he was like, and, you know, I've been trying to read Van Til, and I'm like, oh, well, that's your problem. I mean, this guy hasn't read any basic, a whole lot of basic reform stuff, and he's all of a sudden trying to read Van Til. So
crazy.
How to bring your people along too with baby food to build them up, and that just takes a lot of time, doesn't it? I mean, it just takes a lot of work and time and spending time with them and giving them things that are manageable.
By the way, that's not an insult when you say baby food, because we all start out that way.
Yeah, that's
right. We
don't
dive into the deep end of the pool, at least not if we're wise. We start out in the waiting pool.
That's right.
And
that wasn't
eventually
meant to
make
be
our way to the deep end.
Yeah, you have to train yourself to where you can read heavier theology. But I guess, Camden, you asked the question about how do you approach people that may challenge you. And I think helping them see, one thing I do, and I will stop with this, one thing I do a lot with my people is I say, you know, anybody that's ever really studied this issue, and it could be really any issue, said anybody that's really studied this has to admit that it's difficult.
Oh, yeah.
They can't say it's easy. The Bible's not easy. Baptism's not an easy subject, whatever it is. I mean, the gospel's simple, and we can give the gospel very basically in a simple form, but theology is not easy. And I just keep telling them that, just to kind of help them see, okay, we've got to work at this and we've got to think through. So I think that's one of the best things we can do. Would you guys agree? Just telling people up front, this is difficult, so let's go in here and let's wade in here slowly and get into it.
Yeah, it seems to me that whether a person reads a blog or a magazine article or a book, the issue of being someone reading someone with a different perspective, you've got it to, I don't know that reading it on a blog is any different in terms of how I would handle it.
Yeah. And I don't think the answer is to hide things. Right. We wouldn't prefer a world in which people couldn't get information. That's not what we're suggesting. I think I just wanted to open up the possibility of discussing the changes in our culture.
But in that instance, in the instance of someone getting something on the web, but it's true with a book or a magazine article as well. Yeah. There's the issue of the authority or influence of the author or the publication.
Right. Yeah.
And the more popular a guy gets, and I'll say this frankly, Tim Keller, you guys know I have benefited from Tim Keller, and yet there are things I would disagree with him strongly on. He is almost without correction among a lot of PCA guys, and that's not good. That's not good that people can't say, I think Tim Keller's wrong about this.
Yeah.
Because he's so popular. And I'm only picking him because he is so very popular. I mean, I think George W. Bush actually just quoted Keller.
Yeah, he did in his recent book.
And that's great. Praise God. Tim Keller's a dear brother and God is using him. But I'm not without criticism. Now, you know, I also am not popular, so I'm under a lot of criticism.
Well, what we end up here is just the function.
Popularity contest, and that's not right.
It's a changing landscape of the Reformed Church. What I think we found in the last 10 years is a development of a Reformed celebrity culture. And I don't think it's the desire of any of the men that we might classify as Reformed celebrities that they be called that, but it's what's happened. I think it's basically a function of the influential ministries and websites that get created, and then particularly the conference circuit,
right?
And which we all agree is a good thing, that men and women come together and they discuss the gospel and they teach and exhort people, and people come to hear good teaching. I mean, these are great things, but what you end up, especially with the way many of these conferences go, the larger ones, is you end up seeing it's like a Venn diagram. You have people that are doing the circuit, and it's like so and so will have his conference, and then he'll invite people from another ministry to his, almost in exchange for
being invited to theirs.
I don't know. This is a very crude way to describe it.
But it's true.
There's a cluster
of conference
speakers. But it's right. I mean, these guys are gifted men. God will raise up more gifted men. And ultimately, it's a matter of our hearts and how we respond to it, right? I mean, I guess I've thought a lot about this. Before I was a Christian, I worshiped musicians and movie stars, and that's what I gave, and athletes. That's what I gave my time, my energy, my thoughts. Yeah. You know, right. I worshiped the creature. We can do that with pastors.
Of course,
I mean, that's
the
whole point. I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos. I found myself doing that. Oh, this guy's.
I guess what
you
I
know, and my, we put them in the place of Jesus instead of saying, okay, in as much as their ministry is a benefit to me, it's a benefit to me because they're pointing me to Jesus Christ. And I'm seeing more of him. And if we're not careful with that, and that's really what happens, isn't it? A lot of younger people get enamored with a personality because of the conferences. They're not guarding their hearts, and it's really pastor worship.
I guess I agree with you 100% there, but I guess my particular issue with the celebrity culture that has developed is I question whether there are only that few number of great teachers. I mean, to make the argument there that, well, these are the gifted men, but there are hundreds of others.
Oh, sure,
well,
sure, sure.
I mean, I think we've just demonstrated that.
Some of that is just God's providence, as Jeff said.
In God's providence, they've plugged into influential networks.
Yeah, and I know some of the guys, you know, responsible for some of the big conferences, and I think they're actively seeking out new guys, and they do realize that this is a problem sense of it's the same people all the time for every conference. So I do think this is on people's radars, and I think they are looking for new people. You know, Camden, it's interesting because there's a number of really strong guys that we know in America that aren't at conference levels, but it's a lot more prevalent in America where, you know.
But there's always going to be
UK has a ton of guys that because they don't have the UK doesn't have the celebrity culture the way we have in America. Do you know what I'm saying? It's almost like Hollywood is unique to America, and then we bring that into
well,
the church.
Well, except that let's not forget that in the history of the church there have been well-known leaders.
Right, right. Okay? Fame is not wrong.
Everybody was not Martin Luther or John Calvin.
Yeah, there's nothing. No. Okay,
so I mean there are what I guess you would describe as more widely known people, less widely known people, and the truth the error that we commit if we fall into this trap is to think they're the more widely known, the more intelligent or the more spiritual.
Right.
And that's something we have to avoid.
That's the danger I see. And I see social media promoting that. I see, you know, I guess the combination of the internet is not a place for healthy debate theologically. It's not. I mean, frankly, if you want to debate someone in a healthy, God-honoring way, then meet them in person. Mm-hmm. You know, sit down with them, drink a beer, you know, talk through issues in a loving and yet frank way. And what I think the social media has done is said, this guy's really popular, listen to him, and oh, don't you dare say anything negative about him because you're attacking my idol. I mean, that's really what...
I know, but how is that different from past generations, except... where there were pamphlet wars.
Right, right.
I mean, you still have that issue.
Still have, yeah.
And there's a sense in which what you do with the person who says, but, you know, you're teaching a Sunday school class, and this has actually happened to me, so it's not hypothetical. And someone raised an issue, and I said, oh, I think you've been listening to such and such a program and such a speaker, and I have a lot of respect for so-and-so. Yeah. However, right. At this particular point, I disagree with them on this particular issue. This is his view. This is my view. And this is why he holds his view. And this is why I hold my view.
Yeah, that's fine.
So you actually have to get past the personality to the ideas, right. The issues that are being presented.
Yeah, and I'm not advocating some sort of fame socialism in which we take... recognition from one person and indiscriminately try to give it to somebody
which
else.
Which is the tendency in America, but also down in the land down under, it's called the tall poppy syndrome. Are you familiar with the tall poppy syndrome?
I didn't know you were such an expert with the language of the land down under.
Well, I only know a few things, and one of them is what is called
Jeff's demonstrating
tall poppy syndrome,
knowledge.
Which is if you stick out above the crowd, above the crowd, you get your head chopped off.
Well, unfortunately, sometimes that happens too with the people that get extra critical attention because they happen to be those who receive.
So the truth is, none of these are all of these can be bad things or good things depending on.
Right. So would it be safe to say maybe in this discussion, this our freestyling discussion on this, that the internet really does amplify all the weaknesses that exist,
and the technology technology can enable certain things that would. And let's talk about this next. We wanted to maybe touch on the idea of multi-site churches or different campuses within a typical network. The idea being that somebody would have such a well-known figure, and they would want to broadcast the sermons of this figure to different campuses. You know, several years ago, this wasn't possible with technology, but with the recent decades, with satellite uplink technology, and now just with the internet, we have video conferencing capabilities. We have opportunity for doing certain things ecclesiologically that weren't a possibility before. So we really don't have case studies for this. We don't have many people spending much theological ink discussing these things. But how do we go about, as Reformed people, understanding ecclesiology and a proper shepherding ministry within a church and church office and authority and all that, given technology.
Well what's behind this, of course, is that corporations have been doing in-house seminars and training sessions via satellite uplink, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And schools, educational institutions have been doing this.
Yeah.
So we can, I think initially we can say it's not all bad. In other words, there are contexts where this kind of a situation might be perfectly fine. Maybe it may be not ideal, but in a classroom environment,
that to me is different than the worship setting.
Right, that's what I'm getting at.
Right, right.
Okay, well, so we're setting the stage here.
I'm wanting to paint to say that the use of a technology to bring a well-known speaker or teacher is not wrong generally.
Yes.
Okay. As long as you have, now I'm speaking about something where you might be allowed to have we've been using videos and DVDs in a learning environment for a while. That's not necessarily new. What we're talking about is in worship, no longer having the preacher or pastor
physically present.
Well, to be fair, they would say there are pastors physically present. So the Mark Driscolls would say, well, no, there are pastors there, but I'm the guy preaching on the screen because the people, you know, I don't even know if you'd say this, the people want to see me, though. And that is the reality, that more people come because they want to listen to Driscoll.
But in that instance,
the problem is that that defies a biblical model of pastoral ministry.
Yeah, I was going to ask
preaching
you that.
And pastoring, not this divided, okay, I preach, these guys pastor. I mean, that's why we have the ruling elder, teaching elder distinction that we believe the Bible teaches.
If you are a minister, then you ought to be doing preaching and pastoring of the other elements of the pastoral job.
Well, let's talk about what are the different offices of Christ and how do they work themselves out in the church. We have Christ has a threefold office. He's prophet, priest, and king. And different people have argued for how those offices work themselves out. I'm thinking of Craig Troxell and then Michael Matosian, who's working on a dissertation right now on the Munis triplex and its implications for ecclesiology. How do you guys think those three offices work themselves out, and how does that fit into the pastor's specific tasks?
Let me just say this, and then you guys take it over, because I actually probably don't agree with Troxell on this point. And here's my reservation. The Bible's clear that in the Old Testament there were, you know, little m Messiah, anointed prophets, priests, and kings that were types of Christ. Those offices prefiguring the work of the Redeemer, and then he is God's prophet, priest, and king. And then I think the New Testament's pretty clear that we are prophets, priests, and kings in him. All believers are by union with him. And the New Testament's very clear about what offices there are via qualification in the pastoral epistles, so elder and deacon, and then maybe that distinction between teaching and ruling elder, depending on how you understand that verse about especially those that labor in the word and doctrine. So it seems to me that while I understand why a lot of the Dutch have done what Troxell's doing and saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but the pastor preacher in sort of a three office scheme is like the king, or like the prophet, I mean, and then the diaconate is like the ruling elders are like the kings, and the deacons are like the I'm messing this up. Priest. That comes from the Dutch. A lot of the Dutch background. Is that what Troxell's saying?
Well, in one respect, but he would see that the pastor's ministry would touch upon all of them too. And I don't think each of these offices are hermetically sealed off from one another. For instance, the pastor, administers the sacraments, and in some sense, that's a kind of a priestly activity. In no way is it a re-sacrifice of Christ, as Roman Catholics would teach. But also the pastor, though he's also exercises the prophetic element in preaching of the word, he also can exercise the keys of the kingdom along
ruling
with the session
and
as he rules. So you end up with some overlap there too.
Right. My concern is that if we start pressing it too hard, we're going to end up almost reconstructing an Old Testament typical system that is not intended in the New Testament, and that we lose something of that all believers are a royal priesthood, kings and priests to our God, and all believers have a role as prophet and office bearers. Yes, also, I just I guess I'm a little concerned that maybe the New Testament and the apostolic hermeneutic doesn't necessarily teach that. I'm not saying there's not an analogy, perhaps, and so maybe I need to research it more. I guess I'm just trying to be zealous to say, what is the apostolic interpretation of those offices? And not wanting to go beyond that. Now, I could be wrong, and maybe by deduction, biblically, and I have to study Troxell's position more, but I've just been uneasy with that. And then, of course, Keller takes it even further, beyond the offices and office bearers to denominations, with that famous post he did in September 2009 on his trip to Willow Creek and their kingly ministry. And this is actually what he says. Let me read this to you guys. He takes John Frame's tri-perspectivalism, and he says, John Frame's tri-perspectivalism helps me to understand Willow. The Willow Creek-style churches have a kingly emphasis on leadership, strategic thinking, and wise administration. The danger there is that the mechanical obscures how organic and spontaneous church life can be. The Reformed churches have a prophetic emphasis on preaching, teaching, and doctrine. The danger there is that we can have a naive and unbiblical view that if we just expound the word faithfully, everything else in the church, leadership development, community building, stewardship of resources, unified vision, will just happen by themselves. The emerging churches have a priestly emphasis on community, liturgy and sacraments, service and justice. The danger there is to view community as the magic bullet in the same way Reformed people view preaching. And then he says, by thinking this way, it makes it possible for me to love and appreciate the best representatives of each of these contemporary evangelical traditions. So Keller actually goes beyond where Troxell would go with almost a sociological observation of prophet, priest, and king in the offices to different denominations ecumenism, really.
There is actually probably John Frame's book on evangelical ecumenism. What was the name of the book? Evangelical Reunion?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Which I have and read years ago when I was a Salvation Army officer, actually, and didn't agree with it then either, because I don't. This is behind it. I don't believe that denominations are purely the result of sin. I think that's a rather facile.
It's also saying that you could have legitimate denominations that are unbiblical. Because
yeah, that's
if the prophetic
the other problem.
Ministry
clearly,
is the ministry
right.
of word.
Clearly, faithful. Here Keller is relativizing the differences between denominations,
right?
As if it were legitimate to have emergent churches.
Now, what I'm hearing a lot of guys do in the Acts 29 type movement of church planning, and I have a good friend, we've had a lot of conversations, they'll say things like, well, I think this guy really has, he's more of a king and I'm more of a priest in the church and leadership. So they start tagging different people in leadership with these titles. And the question I'm always left with is, how do you know what qualifies you to be more kingly? Do you see where I'm going with that? Like, by what objective
standard?
By what objective standard do I judge? So it's just, well, this guy's not good with finances, so he's not a king. I mean, I just have a hard time with that. The careless use of that language.
Well, it's a creative use, but I'm not sure it's a legitimate use. But again, behind Tim Keller's use of that is a view, perhaps, I don't know this is the case, but perhaps of denominations. But we kind of got off track. We were talking about the use, in multi-site churches. The pastor who is, quote, unquote, pastoring but not in the pulpit preaching is already got a truncated ministry.
It's
yeah, but not if he's more of a king. Because he's not a prophet. I'm just trying to apply.
Right. Okay.
Just arguing for argument's sake.
Well, that points up perhaps the fallacy of that idea.
Right.
Because the minister, the pastor, is called to, has several different functions within the office of pastor, right?
Right.
A preacher, teacher, evangelist, counselor. All of those, catechist, whatever, those all fall under the function of the pastor, subservient to Christ and his word.
Let me ask you guys just a complete shift, even though it's related. What do you guys think
Free
about
association?
Well, it's associated, but what do you guys think about the whole senior minister, associate minister, assistant pastor? I know the OPC and the PCA differ on. You guys don't have assistant pastors. We do. You have associate ministers, I believe.
Right. Well, maybe for clarification, what is the distinction between an associate and an assistant?
Can I, as the OPC guy, answer that, Nick? Even though
I'm wanting to hear what you guys think.
Assistant to the regional pastor?
No, the assistant pastor in the PCA is one called by the session, not the congregation.
Yeah, he can. He's hired.
And he does
and
not
by
have a vote on the session.
And it's a specific pastoral focus, so he would be maybe pastor of college ministry. It's
now,
just that the, one Nick, little specific
yeah. does,
focus.
Does the assistant pastor have a vote in presbytery? Because if he does, he should
does
have a vote on
vote.
The session.
He gets a vote in presbytery and not in session.
There's a problem with that.
I know. It's inconsistent. But I'm asking, do you think we've maybe functionally created what we're seeing even in the multi-site movement by having this hierarchical structure that we've had for decades in our own churches?
Well, I mean, I don't
pastoral
have
ministry.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with having the designation senior pastor or senior minister, because usually that implies a man with more experience and wisdom and background.
But you think all the TEs, all the teaching elders in a Presbyterian church should be preaching regularly?
Yes.
What are those?
I do agree.
What are teaching elders?
Yeah, what are they?
I'm making a joke because Jeff and I are of the three office persuasion.
Yes.
Oh, well, I understand that. But, I mean, functionally, while I'm a 2.5 office guy, too, with a distinction, we end up in the same place.
I agree with you there. There's a pastor
who is the minister, who is the chief among equals.
Well, you know, in that
prima
instance,
inter pares. Yeah.
In that instance, Nick, what you're talking about, on the session, the senior minister as opposed to associate minister, let's leave behind the assistant minister distinction. You have associate pastor and senior pastor.
Yeah, associate's still called by the church.
Right.
He is,
has one vote on the session.
He is a minister.
Right.
And
right.
And so therefore his gifting for the gospel ministry should have been verified
by
presbytery. And so it's much different than somebody. And my personal opinion is associates are fine, and it's important, I think, to have those designations. If you just had two ministers and there was no title associated with either, you'd run into some other difficulties. But for instance,
you have to have a leader. There's always got to be a leader,
right?
Even if
and
he's chief among equals.
I struggle with people that are being ordained and installed to particular ministries that also don't have at least semi-regular responsibilities and all the things that a minister should do. For instance, I struggle with the idea if you have a man who's ordained and installed as a gospel minister for youth ministry, and he doesn't do visitations and he doesn't preach regularly.
I struggle
with those sorts of things. Specialization.
Right.
But I'm at the same time very supportive of people that are ordained and installed and their primary responsibility is a particular ministry within the church.
That has to be met.
Let's take the example of myself. I'm the teacher of the congregation, but I do in terms of my ministry, both locally in the congregation, but in presbytery and in visiting other churches, I do all the things that a pastor would do.
Right. In the OPC, there are three forms of minister, three types of installation
functions.
There's pastor, which is typical. Every particular church has a pastor. You have teachers, which are not every church has. Actually, very few have. But if seminary professors are often ordained and installed at a church as a teacher, Jeff is installed as a teacher. But then we also have a third function of evangelist, which are typically the missionaries.
They're church planters.
And church planters. Right. So, Nick, you're functioning through the OPC lens as an evangelist at the moment.
Right. And I think the OPC seeks to be as biblical as they can be with their terminology and distinctions. But I guess my thought with the whole multi-campus thing is that it's indicative of the way we viewed there are these great men and they do all the preaching, and then you can have other, and they're real pastors, but they're not as good as the other guy. So we got to stream this guy's face in. And I just think about what Jesus says to the disciples, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he raises up laborers for the harvest. I mean, am I so narcissistic to think that everybody needs to hear me? You know, when God's given me this sphere, I mean, I'll say that. I'm sorry. It is.
Well, it's also the idea. I think Carl Truman has said on another occasion that not every sermon everyone or not every sermon someone has written deserves to be published.
Right.
And so you end up with this.
We've cited Carl 3 or 4 times now. We've got to stop doing that.
Yeah, we've turned him into a celebrity.
You know, that's right. You know what else? I find myself on many occasions stepping in the pulpit on Sunday and preaching to my people. That's something very unique that I've experienced this last year. I know New Covenant. God has allowed me to plant this church and has used me to gather people. And I find myself preaching to our specific needs. I don't see how a multi-campus person can do that. Now, I understand you can argue all truth is God's truth. All truth is good for God's people. There is a general doctrinal effectiveness of all preaching ought to have on all the people of God. But I just have a very hard time. I mean, you look at the 7 churches in Revelation, they are spiritually in different conditions. And Jesus caters messages to them. How can you do that with multi-campuses, sometimes in other states? That doesn't, to me, it doesn't fit with a biblical model of ministry at all. And now I'm grateful for Mark Driscoll's preaching. I'm grateful we can watch him on the web. But I do not think that is Christ's model of preaching to a local church. Just, you know, streaming some guy in.
Well, I mean, I feel that myself when I do pulpit supply. And now, in some instances, it's a congregation where I'm returning, so I get to know the people. But one of the things I feel keenly is that the preaching that I do can't be of the... I don't mean where you call out a person on the carpet and preach at them, but I mean,
right.
You know, I don't have the familiarity with the congregation.
Yeah, it's critical that
where
be
I can do the more pastorally sensitive application.
Right.
What if a portion
of your congregation is straying off into false teaching, and well, let's put it in the campus, multi-campus. So you've got one of the campuses, a number of the people have gotten into some weird homeschooling cult movement. And I don't think that would happen in Acts 29 church, but let's say it did. And, you know, the main campus where the preacher is not into that. Well, he's going to get up and preach a sermon, and that sermon's going to go to all those campuses. So When I come in to the pulpit, I know by and large, I hope I know somewhere where my people are. And when I preach a message, I have racing through my mind, not one specific person as if I'm preaching to one person, but I'm thinking about the totality of the picture of the condition of the people before me and myself. And so I don't know. It just doesn't sit well with me to think, you know, that we're going to move to this video pastor format.
Max Headroom. Well, these are some difficult issues, and we just wanted to scratch on the surface and try to bring these up. But hopefully, I'll enjoy doing these free discussions once in a while because it sparks conversation, it sparks critical thought, and we can feed off each other. But also, I believe it can provide a window into the way we think. I don't want to privilege the way we think, but it betrays something of what our presuppositions are, and that can be helpful to some people that might not be Reformed or very Reformed, just to hear us debate these things.
Right.
And so I think there's some usefulness there.
Some of what the reticence that we have is also, it would be the same kind of thing as if we comparing a person to going to church, actually being in a congregation as opposed to watching it on TV.
Yeah, there's a difference. Yeah.
I mean, there are limitations, there are benefits. You can benefit from watching a service on TV.
Yeah, bodies are important.
You can sleep in later.
Bodies are important. Yeah. You know, just look at the Gnostic heresy.
But there is something that we believe goes on in the worship service.
It's unique. Of the gathered assembly, right?
On audio video.
Yeah.
Right. You can't fulfill the one another passages.
Right.
Even Hebrews 10:23 and 24, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together as is the manner of some, but exhort one another. daily, lest, you know, any of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Or so there's our worship experience on the Lord's Day is not just spectator sport, some guy speaking down to us. It's also our active participation in dialogue with the living God and singing praises to him and listening to him speak to us, but also in one another, the ministry one to another. And that needs to be emphasized. And I mean, I don't understand why we would say, I mean, essentially the argument for multi-campus is built on we can get more people in. If we and that's what Driscoll said on that Gospel Coalition video a few weeks, months back, is look, but if I can have 10,000 people here because I'm streaming in verse 1,000, why wouldn't we do that? Well, the ends don't always justify the means. I mean, God determines the means, and you know, then the question is, well, are those people coming for the right reason? If they won't come and hear another guy and they're only coming to hear Driscoll,
personality.
Is there not a personality worship issue there? I'm just, you know, and then why should we feed that? Why shouldn't we teach people that, frankly, not all ministers are superstar preachers, but if they're faithful to the word of God and they're going to feed the sheep, then that's a faithful ministry and you should be able to sit under that. So I think this whole thing, the multi-campus, is also going to boost the whole superstar thing, Camden.
Yeah, they're related.
Again, like the conferences.
Yeah, these are difficult questions, but hopefully we can rest in the fact that Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, takes care of his church. And we can read and study and submit ourselves to Scripture humbly, and the Lord, by his Spirit, will take care of things. So we just hope that this would be a good opportunity to raise some of the issues and concerns that we have with contemporary ecclesiology. And there are many resources out there. We can read about ecclesiology and other shepherding ministry type things, and we can provide a link or a list of various resources in the show notes that might be very helpful for people to read and to listen to. We do want to mention the various websites of which we are involved. Nick is, of course, and Jeff writing at feedingonchrist.com, but also the respective church websites. Nick, you're at newcovpres.com, is that correct?
That's right.
And sometimes I forget if it's com or org. And then Jeff is at calvary-amwell.org, Calvary OPC and Ringo. So you can visit those two websites and find videos and also audio of various sermons and information about service times and whatnot. And you can visit us, Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org, and there you'll find links to everything that we do. Reformedforum.tv, historiasalutis.com, all sorts of websites that we have running full of resources from several years of doing these programs. And we're very grateful for all of the support that we receive and for all the encouragement we get through the comments and through emails. And so we encourage you likewise to visit us online and find out and take part in everything that we've been doing for several years. So thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.